This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
The current time is 6:02 p.m. and you are tuned in here to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant. I will be here with you up until 8 p.m. Mitch is out. He is back spending some time with his family this summer. So for the most of this summer, I'm going to be the only one in the studio. But in the meantime, Mitch is out altogether this week. He will not be joining us, so we're going to have a very abridged version of Tech Talks. In the meantime, I'm going to find a lot of music for us to enjoy for this evening, and I'll hope to see you back here in just a few minutes. In the meantime, keep it locked all the way to the left here, your only alternative left, WRFL Lexington. Joining me here in person, you through the magic of phones.
Yeah, it's me, Mitch, the other co-host.
Even when he's not here, he's here.
Exactly. I believe it or not, everyone, live in the station. I am its resident ghost. I have literally been a disembodied voice the past 2 years in the radio as well as in the real world. How's that for a mind twist?
That's pretty great.
And no one knows the difference, unless you do, and then you just need to not. It's fine. So, what our main story tonight is going to be is actually quite interesting. It's something that I didn't know anything about until this week. And even having found out about it, it's a trip. So, basically, to start off this segment, we need to explain a little bit about how our cell phone network works, correct?
Yeah, that'd be a good place to start.
Cool. So, obviously, everyone, you know, if you have a cell phone, there are cell phone towers that pick up your signal, and then if you make a phone call, your phone has an antenna in it, and so you will dial the number you want, and that antenna will connect to the nearest authorized cell tower, most likely run by your carrier. If not, then it might be run by a different carrier and you might get charged. But anyways, it connects to the nearest cell phone tower is the main point. And then that tower will route your call through the directory of all the phone numbers that it knows and connect you to the right phone number.
Yeah. And so additionally, what happens is your phone checks in every now and again to whatever towers it's closest to, and it reminds them, hey, I'm here and I'm ready for updates. That's kind of how your phone keeps up with how it communicates with those around it.
Yeah. And that's where it gets like the time. So if you have a cell phone that gets set by the, you know, automatic time update, that comes straight from the towers. So beyond that,
this protocol is called the Common Channel Signaling System Number 7. And it's an agreed-upon practice among all of the different phone carriers, right? Here in the U.S., they all talk to each other, they all agree on this protocol so that all phones can work kind of across the board anywhere here in the U.S. and abroad.
The same way that the Internet works with HTTP, which stands for Hypertext Transfer Protocol. It's very similar to that, except it's cellular and cellular related.
Yeah. And so, again, kind of one of the big things that this hinges on is that your phone connects to a tower nearby every so often, and relays its information about where it is. And that gets distributed to the whole network so that when you call another number, it can look up where that phone last checked in and travel to that tower to send the signal.
Exactly. So at that point, that's where we get into that SS7 protocol we were talking about. So the point of this article that we're talking about tonight is that it is actually not a very secured protocol. And whenever we're talking about how the modern age, most people do their banking via text. Or mobile banking, et cetera. And for such a key part of our daily lives, such as banking, we need to know that protocol is secure. And as it is, SS7 is not secured. And so they finally – go ahead.
And so what Mitch is going for here is that the SS7 protocol is what underlies every time you get a text – and so if you're using a two-part authentication process, if you're first authenticating by typing in your password and then maybe your email account sends you, there's limitless ways that this is used. People's bank accounts do it. People's email accounts will text them with a one-use code. This is what we're talking about here. And since this isn't particularly secure, these messages can be intercepted.
Yes. So basically an experiment some hackers in Germany, I believe, finally broke into this SS7 protocol and more or less cracked the protocol and have used it to more or less steal millions of dollars via this two-part authentication. They were able to spoof the authentication via the phone network, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and so what they were doing is they were getting on the network and masquerading as other phones or other devices on the network. Everything has a unique way of being identified. Usually we think of that as being the SIM card in your phone. And so they were masquerading as different phones from one device.
Yes. And so by doing that, they bypassed that two-part authentication requirement because they were able to spoof the signal. And, all right, I am person X, and I have sent out for a bank request code, and I'm the hacker. So the hacker intercepts basically person X's return message through the network by latching on to what his SIM card number is. If instead of that one-time use code getting routed to him, it instead gets routed to the hacker. Is that more or less
what's
going on?
Yeah, that's a good summary. And so the hacking that is occurring here is it requires a lot of information about you. They have to know your email or your login username, and then they also have to know your password to get past the password. Or they can work their way through it brute force. And then after they get past your password, they also have to know your phone number and some information about your phone so that they can steal that text message when it's on its way to you. So this is a very sophisticated attack. That is one of the notable parts about it. It is an avenue of attack, but it is a very sophisticated one.
It's not as simple as a denial of a DDoS attack or denial of service attack, like the internet works with. It definitely is dealing with not hobbyist hackers. A DDoS attack can be executed by someone who is a hobbyist hacker, However, this attack is going to be carried out by someone who is your stereotypical video or movie hackers, if you will. You know, someone with training or lot, you know, hours and hours of practice who has, you know, done some serious hacking before. So the average person doesn't have a whole lot to fear about this attack, and there's not a whole lot that the average person could do to secure themselves against, against this kind of attack, minus not doing your banking via things like text.
Trouble to that is that for a long time we've talked about two-factor authentication as being the secure way to do all of these things online. You know, we've been training people for years that two-factor authentication is the most secure method. And objectively, it probably still is the most secure method, but the exploit has been proven to be workable. The avenue of attack to steal text messages and use that information to steal money has been proven to work. Now.
Yes. And, you know, it's a very hard fix. It's not going to be something that we can just, strap a new firewall on or anything like that. This is going, in order to fix this, we would have to, because the other thing, too, if I'm not mistaken, you were mentioning before the talking segment, Grant, was that someone could even set up a, more or less, a digital tower, a fake tower, and send messages that way and intercept messages through that digital tower. And as far as the network is concerned, it's a perfectly valid and legitimate cell phone carrier tower. You know, there's no reason not to trust any of the messages that come from that tower that you spoofed. Right?
Yeah. So part of the one of the ways by which you can abuse SS7 is that, you know, imagine I'm a cell phone carrier. I'm someone like AT&T or Verizon. I have no real concerted reason to keep up with all of Verizon's towers. That's their problem. That's not my problem. It's just that if I get a message from a Verizon tower, then I know that I need to pass that along. And so that's what the trick is. That's what the issue is that you can set up a tower and tap straight into the system by just faking these signals that you can send to other towers to kind of fool them into believing that you're a real legitimate tower, part of a real legitimate company that has real phones, when all of this is just masquerade in order to steal text messages or phone calls.
Exactly. And so that's another major concern, is that there's no easy way to protect against those kind of attack methods that unless we make some sort of registry of cell phone towers, which no one has done yet. So if we did that, that would be the first step to any potential fix that we could implement. It's just, that's the common protocol, and at this point, there's just not a whole lot that we can do to re-secure everything without more or less overriding the entire way we handle cellular networks, which obviously is not a very feasible thing. That would have to be something that we would implement one network at a time.
Yeah, and for any remaining parts that don't catch up, they would be not only vulnerable still, but they would retain that vulnerability and they would be, again, still access points to a secure network. If I had 10 towers and I upgraded 9 of them and I didn't upgrade the 10th, that 10th is still a vulnerability that would get you into the whole network, you know?
Yes, that's true. So without causing every network to have to more or less enforce this upgrade decision, then we're not really going to be able to fix this vulnerability, which is a very big concern. So that's our main segment for the evening. It's a very interesting article that we'll post on our Facebook page. And it's something that no one really thinks about. You know, how does our cell phone network work? We just press a button on our local phone, and all of a sudden we're talking to someone thousands of miles away, you know? And that's how this whole thing works. So,
with that, we're going to take a break. Got some music coming up for you. Thanks for sticking around, Mitch, here for a little bit. Thanks for calling in.
Definitely. Thank you all for tuning in and checking out with us. This summer, we're planning on getting a few new co-hosts on board. You know, we're going to try to bring back one of our former trainees, Cassini, and one of our current co-workers, Max, and try to get them plugged in and helping out as co-hosts. And that way, you can sort of pick up the slack for where I'm not in town. Other than that, feel free to keep up with us on our Facebook page, and we will see you all next week.
All right. All right. We're going to have another quick segment here coming up in a little bit, in about 10 or so minutes. But in the meantime, if you're just joining in, the current time is 7 p.m. You were tuned in to WRFL Lexington. My name is Grant. And
I am Mitch.
There you go. And together we are Tech Talks, and we'll be back in just a little bit.
That's right.
Gotta wait for the delay to bounce back. I said, my name is Grant.
And my name is Mitch.
There he is. Joining us from a place that
Ohio.
Isn't here in the station. I am in the station, and Mitch is not, so he's hanging out, and this
no,
is...
No, but I am Dirty Dan.
And this is probably the format that we're going to take for a good bit of the summer. So, buckled in. We're taking off for another segment here on Tech Talks.
That's right, everybody.
You had something. Go ahead.
I had something? I thought you had something.
Oh, okay. I thought you had another story you wanted to talk about.
So, apparently, even though Tesla is hemorrhaging money, according to a recent study, they have more investors than traditional motor companies like Ford and General Motors.
Well, Tesla, like a lot of things getting started out of the gate, does generally lose money the first several quarters, but they have been aggressively losing money, but it also kind of reminds me of the behavior of Amazon early on. Amazon lost money, at least on paper, quarter after quarter after quarter when they first got started, because they kept building new facilities and new plants, and that's the same reason why Tesla is losing money on paper.
Solar City, which is a battery making company, and they make the Tesla batteries.
Yes, and they also make the what else? The solar panels. That's where we were going. Tesla is now taking pre-orders on the Tesla solar roofs, solar panels.
Mm-hmm.
That has started, and they take a down payment as a deposit that will remove the existing roof and then install solar tiles that look
like
normal
regular roofing
roof.
Solution.
Yeah. But That's available now. That's something that they have started on, so they're taking pre-orders for that. In addition to Tesla, one of the things that I wanted to get to was this discussion of a planet, HAPT-P26b. So it's the second planet from the 26th discovered star of HAT-P. And it's about 430 light years away, and we've been able to measure it very well because it circles very closely to its host star, and a year on that planet, traveling all the way around that star, is 4.2 days. Just to give you a scope of what a strange planet this is and what a strange star this is. But with that, one of the interesting things about it is, since it makes orbits so often, the best way to measure information about a planet is to wait for a point to align when the planet will be in between us and that star. And the star then gets dimmer, and it's easy to measure things. You can guess about the mass and the size of the planet based on how dark the star gets and based on how the light deforms around the planet. All of these things can be calculated by some very sophisticated astronomy. But one of the other interesting things they can do is when a star... Yeah. And so when a star is intercepted and the planet is in between us and the star, it actually changes the color of that star just a little bit. And so we can measure that deviation in color. And from that, there's a whole bunch of calculations that can be made to guess at what the atmosphere of that planet contains. And what's so notable about HAT-P26b is that it appears to contain quite a lot of water in the atmosphere, and therefore probably clouds. Given the distance that it is from its sun, it should be within the point of liquid water. And if there's water measured in the atmosphere, then it's also within the range of gaseous water vapor, which means that it might have a rain cycle not unlike that of Earth.
Mm-hmm. So it's a planet closer to Neptune than Earth, but has similar weather patterns as far as rain is concerned?
It's a planet closer to... Okay, I see what you're saying. It's a planet that's about the distance of Mercury around a much smaller star so that it doesn't overheat.
Cooler.
Yeah. And so since it gets all that sunlight, it probably has a very active rain cycle happening. Yeah, Neptune is called the blue planet, but that's actually what it's named after. But it doesn't actually have much, if any, water on it. It's just the color of the gases around Neptune.
The diffracted light. And we've had several conversations about how light diffraction works, and it's still a very fascinating subject. So I guess one of the things I am a little confused about, just since we're on the topic, what gases is Neptune composed of in its atmosphere primarily that gives it that blue color?
So Neptune has this iconic blue atmosphere, but the reason why it's blue is actually, the first thing to note is that it's so far out from the sun, it receives a very, very small amount of light energy, and so the atmosphere is predominantly these light gases that don't thicken up into liquids very easily, things like hydrogen and helium, and that blue comes from methane.
Okay.
Methane is just a little bit translucent blue, much like the atmosphere of Earth has that same bluish tint when it breaks up the light, except Neptune has more methane, so it's got a bluer tint to it.
I see.
It's about 2% methane.
The magic number, everyone, 2% methane. So I wonder by that logic, if since the Industrial Revolution, more methane has been produced into the Earth's atmosphere, if Earth appears bluer, which might account for, if you remember we discussed this, in ancient times there was no concept of the color blue.
Blue is discussed as purple.
Read the Odyssey.
Mitch, take another go. We lost you there for a second.
Okay. I almost wonder if this isn't related to our discussion or segment we did a while back about why ancient people didn't see the color blue. If you think about it, since the Industrial Revolution, we have put more methane in the atmosphere than probably existed naturally on Earth during the, first couple centuries.
I have the stats for Earth, by the way. Methane is 0.2%
Okay. But I wonder if that's part of the reason why Earth, if you remember in the Odyssey, it was called a wine dark sea instead of a blue sea. And I wonder if since we've, domesticated animals and, since the Industrial Revolution and whatnot, since we've been pumping more methane into the air, if that's caused Earth to appear bluer.
Perhaps.
That'd be an interesting study to see if Earth, in fact, did become more blue because of all the methane we put in the air.
That's very possible. And possibly so.
All right. Well, was there anything else you wanted to go on about this this topic about? Or
that was everything I wanted to get to right now.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think this has been a good show, and I want to thank you all for tuning in and checking out with us this week. Things can be a little disjointed whenever I'm calling in, and we apologize for the loss of quality. But unfortunately, that's what we have to do to get my voice from Ohio to you,
well,
even
thanks.
Though I actually live in the studio and am a ghost.
Thanks for calling in, Mitch.
No, thank you. All right, guys. With that, we will see you all next week.
Yep. We're going to go ahead and sign off. Just got some music queued up for the rest of the hour here. But thanks for tuning in. This has been an abridged version of Tech Talks here on WRFL, your only alternative left, all the way down at 88.1 FM. Be sure to keep it locked all the way to the left. If you want to keep up with us, you can do that over on our Facebook page. That's WRFL Tech Talks. WRFLTEKTALKS on Facebook. And we'll see you next week.
That's right.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.FM. And, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.